They told us we can have about 15 minutes. And
Can you talk a little louder, John? I can't hardly.
How's that? Is that a little better?
A little better, yeah.
Okay, they said we could have about 15 minutes, so yeah. I'd like to try to capture as much of your radio career as I can. That's mainly what we do on Sunday and what I'm interested in. How do you personify something like Jack Benny's Maxwell on the radio?
Well, that was all done, all of his shows were done live, and they called me in to do... his train caller first. That's the little guy in the depot that says,
"Train leaving on track 5 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Coop. Come on, guys."
Right.
And then he also had a parrot there. And the parrot couldn't come in on cue, so he said, "Can you do a parrot?" And I said,
"Better the cheapskate, better the cheapskate."
Well, I almost got fired for saying that. I was his parent. Then, he also had a French violin teacher.
Professor LeBlanc.
Yeah, Professor LeBlanc, yeah. Who could hardly teach him anything. He started out very well, you know, trying to teach him to play it right, but Jack always played the same, and it was always miserable. And this poor guy he worked himself sick trying to get him to play right. Then he would sing along with Jack practicing, "What a tune your fiddle brings on, how I wish it had no strings on." "And please, Monsieur Benny, the lesson is over. Take the ball and chain off my foot and let me go home."
Yeah.
And, they tried to stick me one time. They tried to give me something that I couldn't do, the writers.
Uh-huh.
So one time they wrote in... we were visiting Epsom Downs in England, you know, the race track.
Sure, yeah.
And they wrote in, "Mel Blanc does an English horse whinny." So I thought for a moment, I never say no to anything. So it came time to do the cue for an English horse whinny, and I gave him this. Well, they always gave me crazy little parts that I thought I couldn't do, but I never say no, and I always did them.
How did that work into the Maxwell?
Well, the Maxwell came along by accident. You know, the sound effects men usually played a phonograph record that had the sound of a motor on it. And then if the Maxwell was supposed to slow down and stop, they'd hold their finger on the record, make it slow down and stop. So one day I saw that they didn't have the electrical socket put into the plug put into the socket, and they couldn't play the record. So I jumped up to the microphone and I made like an electrical, like a 1926 Maxwell, like this. And Jack fell down. "You're not my Maxwell."
Jack fell down a lot. He was very easy to crack up, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And, you know, he would never tell a joke himself. It would be on himself. And he took all the brunt of whatever the actors talked about. And, in fact, everything that he said had something to do with him being the brunt of the joke.
Yeah. Jack Benny, as a man, a lot of, we've been doing this show now, which focuses almost exclusively on radio for about 2 years, and nobody has ever said anything in the least bit derogatory toward Jack Benny. He apparently was the greatest guy that ever walked. I think Frank Nelson told us a story about your auto accident and how he stayed at the hospital all that time.
Yeah, that's right. No, Jack was a wonderful man. He wasn't only my boss, he was one of my best friends. And I had this accident, you know, and I was unconscious for 21 days. And one of the first people I saw when I come out of my unconsciousness was Jack. So I said, "Jack, what the heck are you doing here?" He said, "Oh, I just come by to see how you're getting along." Well, my son later told me, he says, "Dad, you know that Jack was here at the hospital ever since you had your accident, every day, And I just wanted to tell you that. So then when I was brought home after 2 months in the hospital, Jack came out to my home maybe once or twice a week. And one thing was very funny. I was in a full body cast. I couldn't move. So one morning, Jack came to the door, and my wife, Estelle, answered. She said, "Jack." And Jack says, "Is Mel home?"
Your wife, Estelle, I have read somewhere that she was very encouraging to you when you were still in Portland to go to Hollywood and really try the big time.
Yeah, can you talk just a little louder?
Yeah, we're having a little problem because I'm trying to tape and talk at the same time, and we've never done it this way before. But your wife was the one I read somewhere who encouraged you to get out of Portland and go to Hollywood.
Yeah, that's very true. I was working in Portland. I was working on a program called Cobwebs and Nuts, and I was doing a show a half hour a night. 6 nights a week, and I was working maybe 16 hours a day on the darn thing and doing all the voices on it outside of my wife Estelle's voice. She was Mrs. McFlog Poople IV.
Oh, she was playing a part in it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. McFlog Poople?
McFlog Poople.
Poople IV?
The fourth, yeah. And finally, it got to the point where I was working so hard, she said, "What do you want, a nervous breakdown, or you want to go back to Los Angeles?" I said, "Let's go back to Los Angeles." So we did. And the first job I got in Los Angeles was with Johnny Murray, who had a show on KFWB, which was then owned by Warner Brothers. And for the one show, he paid me more than I made all week up in Portland.
Mm. Is it true that you lifted your first dialect from some old Jewish storekeeper in the Portland?
Yeah, that's right. A Mrs. Westerman in Portland, Oregon. And I picked up different Jewish dialects, like the grubber, they call the grubber. He's a big Litvak.
And he's talking down here like this, you see. That's the way he's talking.
And, of course, there's the Galiziano, who was talking like this here, trying to get away entirely from the dialect, you see, like so.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the guy that who is a Litvak, I think they call him, who can't pronounce S's, S-H, like a shirt,
sure.
A nice-looking shirt. They'd always say, "That's a nice-looking shirt. Don't you like the shirt you bank?" And then, of course, there was the gay boy. His name was Mr. Chernoy, and I had a lamp I wanted fixed by him, and he said, "You leave to me, Mr. Blank. I'll take good care of everything. Don't you worry about a thing. I'll take care of the whole thing."
And then you went...
So you see how many different dialects you can do with different different voices you can do in each dialect.
Oh, well, I see it when I hear you do it, but I can't imagine doing it myself. I read somewhere, too, that you had gotten a lot of your early dialects from Chinatown in Portland.
I wanted to find out the difference in a Japanese and a Chinese dialect. So I went to a Chinese place that handles fruit and vegetables, and I pointed to an article, and I said, "What do you call this?" He says, "Oh, that's a head of lettuce."
Hmm.
I said, "What?" He said, "Head of lettuce." I said, "Well, the same as this," and I pointed to another article. He says, "Oh, no, that's cabbage. Head of cabbage and head of lettuce. See, altogether different."
Hmm.
Well, that's a Japanese dialect. And most people think that Oriental dialect is all the same, but that is wrong. See, the Japanese man can't pronounce his L's, like J-K-L, J-K-E-R-L, you will say. And, of course, the Chinese are altogether different. They pronounce almost everything with an L.
I like a Chinese all the time, see. I like to talk like a show, you see. Altogether different.
And they're more sing-songy.
When you're learning this stuff and you're picking it up, did you make a systematic study of these dialects, or did it just come naturally?
Well, no, I made a study of the different dialects. I wanted to talk exactly like they would. Like Russian is altogether different than other language, you see. You know, the way they talk, you see. And I learned different dialects from all the different people I talked with.
Did you...
I can't hear you.
Did you ever figure out how many dialects you've mastered?
No, I can do almost every one.
Huh.
I don't think there's one that they can stick me on.
You did so much comedy in the great radio days. Did you ever do any drama with that?
Yes, I did several dramatic things here in Hollywood and Beverly Hills. And I did a lot of straight parts, but I found out there was much more money in comedy, so I went into comedy exclusively.
Mm-hmm. You did Joe Penner's Duck?
Oh, yeah, I worked with Joe Penner. That was one of the first shows I ever did on Transcontinental Network. And Joe's the guy that said, you want to buy a duck?
Yeah, yeah. He died quite young, didn't he?
Yeah.
What kind of a man was he? What was he like to work with?
Joe was a very wonderful guy. Oh, he was very sensitive. Like somebody wrote in a letter to saying that they didn't like him on the air. And from what I understand from people that worked with him, they said he couldn't stand that, and he committed suicide.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he had a heart attack.
No, he actually, I think he shot himself.
Gee.
I don't know this for sure, but this is what was told to me.
What do you remember? Is there any particular incident from the Benny program that really kind of epitomizes your career there? I know that's always a bonehead question, but...
Well, I think perhaps the spot that Jack liked the best was the CSI routine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'd come in with a big bass violin and say, "You came all the way from Tijuana to play in my orchestra?" And I see you brought your bass violin with you.
See.
What's your name?
Sai.
Sai?
See.
And I see you brought a young lady with you. Is that your sister?
See.
Well, what's her name?
Sue.
Well, what does she do for a living?
So.
So, see.
You know,
that was a whole routine, but Jack loved it. He had it on quite often.
It's still funny.
Oh,
even
yeah.
Today. I'll tell you what, I promised I wouldn't keep you more than 15 minutes, and we're just about at 15 minutes now, and as you can tell from our sound here, we're conducting this under somewhat adverse conditions, but if it's at all possible, I would love to have you on live some weekend if you've got just some time when you've got some leisure, either on a Saturday or a Sunday.
I'd love to do it. But it's just impossible.
Uh-huh.
I am tied up doing this gadget restaurants voices for shows that they have in their restaurants. They have a 50-foot stage with all of the Warner Brothers characters.
Uh-huh.
And they're all done electronically, worked electronically. I have to do 52 shows in advance for them. And I've completed 21, and I had to give up all my college speaking just to do this thing. I spoke at 144 different colleges, and I had to give up all of the others because I was too busy doing this gadget thing.
Is it a possibility that you might be available for something like that after this job is finished?
Well, that'll be at least a year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we could get back in touch with you then if we're still alive and kicking here.
Yeah, could be.
Because, you know, we have a great interest in radio here and how it was done. And I'd really be interested in doing that.
Well, good. Maybe we can do it sometime.
Okay.
John?
Yeah.
I want somebody to say goodbye to you. Oh, incidentally, John, my wife Estelle has a big family back there. She did have at one time. I got cousins I haven't met yet. And the name was originally Goldberg.
Uh-huh.
And then her... Dad's name was Rosenbaum.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine a lot of the people who are listening in will let you know that they're related to us.
Okay.
let me have Porky say goodbye to you, John.
Okay.
Porky, come over here and say goodbye to the gang, would you, Denver?
Oh yeah, Denver, Colorado, Denver, Denver, John, that's all, folks.
Mel, thanks much.
Okay, John.
And listen, if I can bug you again in a year or so, I sure will.
All right, fine. right.
Thanks much.
You bet.
See ya.